Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, women's voices on culture, style, society and well-being. Radio Gorgeous, where women do the talking.
Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, this is Victoria Pearson, and today I'm here with the brilliantly funny comedian, Sindhu V. Sindhu, a warm welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. And my first question is, how did you get started in stand-up?
Well, I'll be very honest with you, it was a little bit of a fluke, in the sense that I had never seen live stand-up when I started. I wasn't planning on it. I just had a free Saturday evening. My kids were home, three of them. They were very little. My parents were visiting from India. And I figured, you know what? I need to get out of here. I'm going to go crazy. And a friend of mine, she'd sent me an email about some charity thing, blah, blah. You know when they send that charity stuff and just giving this, that. Anyway, at the end of that was a link for funny women. And I had linked, because people had said, oh, you're very funny, blah, blah. And then there was a workshop that day, and it was a Saturday. And I thought, I'm sure I'm going to meet English people, and I'm sure they'll drink. So if I go there, this is what my life was like at the point where I just was like, I need some friends. And my husband was traveling, so I went along to the workshop, Funny Women, which is an extraordinary organization, I think, does so much for women in comedy.
Absolutely.
And I did the workshop. And at the end of it, Lynn Parker and Karen Rosie, said to me, you know, we have these awards and you should take part. We thought you were very good. And I said, no, no, no. But they stayed with it. And, you know, a couple of months later, I did the awards and that was that. But when I went to do the awards, I didn't know it was a major competition. I don't know what I thought. I think I was just keeping it suppressed because it was such a way out thing to do. But I remember being on stage and there being an audience, and my distinct memory is thinking, I can never not do this again. So I think technically that's when it became something I wanted to do. I didn't gig properly again for 2 years, just did sporadic stuff. But yeah, that's how I got into it.
I'd agree that when you first do stand up, you get that buzz, don't you? It's almost like a bit like the buzz of fear,
yeah,
almost. And you think, oh, I must do this again.
Yeah.
It felt scary, but it felt good.
I mean, I was so scared that I remember feeling quite out of body and thinking, I can't remember what I said. My friend videoed it on her phone, so I have that. But it's impossible to describe. And then, you know, when I had my first child, I had an epidural. And I remember when the epidural started kicking in, I kind of felt like out of body, but weird. And I was going to produce a child. It sort of felt that kind of disconnected, but not bad.
So giving birth to comedy, literally.
I know, that's so terrible. I mean, I can't even believe I made that analogy. Now I just sound ludicrous. But I'm talking more about the druggy, because I've never done drugs.
No,
that was as close to drugs as I was going to get. So what I'm trying to say is, if I was, I felt high, I guess.
Right, high on comedy.
Yeah.
And so how do your husband and family feel about your material, about them?
I'm glad you asked, because there's this idea that I'm talking about my exact family. And I think that's a mistake, or rather it's a misunderstanding. I'm talking a lot about what it feels for me to be part of a family, you know, because my husband knows me. He appreciates that's how I feel. The children, they're younger. They don't really focus. They don't watch the comedy. But nothing I've said about any of my kids or about my husband is news to anyone who has a husband and or kids.
Yeah.
It's my attitude to it that I think people are like, wow, she's nuts. And I know a lot of men in the audience often think, we're so glad we're not married to her. We don't talk about it a lot, but if anything, I guess my family feels like, well, you know, if you want to go on stage and let people know what a lunatic you are, well, there's nothing we can do about it.
Can you tell us some of those jokes now?
Sure. One of the things is, you know, when you have a very small child, they're so wonderful, right?
Yeah,
they think the world of you, and you're just unbearably loved by them. But the flip side of having a very small child is they are very boring. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they want to show you they love you so much by talking to you all the time. I'm in the loo and there's my daughter standing outside saying, Mama, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you think I'm doing? Can I tell you what happened when the spider this and this? They want to show you they love you by talking to you all the time. But everything they know, you already know.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, oh my God, it is so boring. there's genuinely zero value add in any of the conversations you have with a small child. But you do it anyway. That's when they're small. Then when they're older, like a bit older, they start expecting you to converse with them. I mean, who wants to talk to a 10-year-old? Like, you want to know that they're fine. Yeah. But you don't really care, I mean, about the small things, about what's going on with them. Like, you do in a macro sense. But the minutiae of, like, you know, the Sylvanian family bunny versus, you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to drive this car right off the road. That's hard. And then, you know, and then there's this whole idea, I think, here. I think it's modern-day parenting, but it's more prevalent in the West, about dialogue with your kids. I was not raised like that. We had monologue, where your mother told you what to do and you went and did it.
Right.
The idea of dialogue, where they would discuss with me, but why must I do it? And I think, what do you mean, why? And so I always say, because I'm your mother and I said it.
Right.
I'm genuinely flabbergasted that you need any more explanation than this. I find that taxing.
Because I particularly liked all of your material about, you know, eat, sugar and die kind of thing. I roared at that.
Yeah, with the Indian parents.
Yes.
Yeah. Our mother's always dying on us.
Right, exactly.
To get us to do stuff.
What method do you use to write your material?
I think method is sort of a exaggeration of me getting my stuff together. But I would say the most common thing for me is I'll have an idea. It's usually related to some incident. So an incident will happen. I'll think it's funny. And then I'll find an open mic night and I'll go and talk about it and I'll see if the idea has legs. And then I work backwards and see what was funny about this, what's universal about it, why do people care. It's very informal, but I do, I guess in a way you could say I write on stage as opposed to write stuff and then get on stage. Yeah.
What part of your act usually gets the biggest reaction from the audience?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Really, it depends on the audience. You know, sometimes you're with a lot of people who are married, and they've been married a long time, their kids are older. They love the marriage stuff, you know, how difficult it is to stay married, even though you really like your spouse. I suppose you could say love your spouse, I guess. Let's use that word. And I think it's difficult for any two people to pull on over a very long period of time with the thing, kids, parents, you know, hemorrhoids, whatever your issues are, I don't know. I think it depends on the audience, really, what they go for. I suppose if you're a highly political and woke audience, you'll find me quite boring because I'm talking about really micro, personal stuff. I don't really talk about politics. Oh, well. When I was doing a competition, I was in the Amused Moose, and it was really hard. You had this bit where you had to be funny for 90 seconds or 70 seconds, then you got to the next round. And I was new in comedy. And I really, really wanted to do well. And it was a big deal to do competitions. I mean, it still is. I just know myself better now. But anyway, and I made it through to the quarterfinal, which is a big deal. And at that point, I needed some friends to come and support me in the audience. And these friends of mine knew about stand-up much more than I did. So two of them came along. And I was the first act, which was already bothering me. We had to draw these numbers, and I drew the number one. I wanted to throw myself off the balcony, but I thought, you know, you always think of your kids. I can't do that. What will the kids think? Our dumb mother threw herself off a balcony because she had to go on first at a competition. I mean, so lame. And so the MC did his warm-up and everything, and then I came on stage. And my friend who had come to support me shouted out, "The MC was already funnier than you." And I had never been heckled. I'd hardly been doing comedy for a year, and I just froze. And I knew who it was, and I thought, well, I may not have thrown myself off the balcony, but at the end of this gig, I'm going to murder my friend.
Yeah.
And then my kids would be like, yeah, our mom's in jail because she killed Rahul uncle. So afterwards, I said to him, what were you thinking? He's like, oh, I thought I'd make it more of a comedy atmosphere. I'm like, you idiot. I completely lost him. And he was like, well, I guess you weren't that good. So I'm like, okay, I hate you. I haven't killed him.
No. Do you feel you have to adopt a macho mindset to survive as a stand-up comedian?
No.
No. Do you tap into a masculine stance? Because I sometimes feel that I have to do that. That's what I'm asking you.
No, but it might be that I'm 5'10". I don't know. Is that it? No, but not at all.
That might help because I'm quite small.
Yeah, I don't know, but no, not at all. I don't feel like that at all.
That's good.
Good.
Because I had somebody once said to me, oh, well, you shouldn't wear a skirt because you don't look very strong. If you wear a skirt, you get up there and do comedy.
Yeah, but people are not coming to heavyweight championships. They're coming to comedy.
Yeah.
If you're wearing a skirt and you're super funny, people will forget about the skirt.
I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree.
Whoever told you that, may not have understood how comedy works.
I totally agree. And I thought it was very strange at the time, must say.
You know, I think it's important to let people know, if they ask what you think is important, you know, on how to shore yourself up before you go on stage.
Yeah.
But I think most of that advice for me lives in the concept of one's self-confidence about one's material.
Yes, yeah.
And then after that, other things. And I'm not saying there are not other barriers. I'm just saying I wouldn't really worry about a skirt and no skirt.
No.
I mean, no skirt would be just like just underpants. That would be great. But I don't, you know what I mean.
Could get a bit dangerous, couldn't it? You were recently on Have I Got News For You?
Yes, I was.
Which was absolutely delighted to see that you were doing that, Sindhu.
Thank you.
Because I think they really need more female panellists on there.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be the view, and I agree. I think you need more female comics in general, sprinkled all over the landscape. It was, I guess the thing is, because I follow, I'm not a political comic, but I follow the news. My background is in political science. So I was a little nervous about keeping up. Like, I don't, because I'm not a political comic, I don't make jokes about politics, and yet Have I Got News For You is really about that. And the comedian's seat is sort of a tough one because you got to be funny. That's what they're looking to you for. The politicians on there, they don't have to be funny.
That's right.
They have to be interesting, or they have to say something like, Jeremy Corbyn gave me a sandwich once, and everyone's like, yay, clap, 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 because that is interesting. Like, that's the behind the curtain with them. Or they can just be dour but have a view and fight their view. But for the comedian, whatever else you do, you also got to be funny. So I found that a little bit intimidating, like, can I pull it off? But it wasn't difficult because, first of all, they're all very welcoming.
Yeah.
And they are not, no one's out to trip you. They want you to do well. They want you to have a good time. They want the show to be a success. I think in my case, I was particularly lucky because Xander, the host, is just such a generous gentleman. And both Paul and Ian were great. I like Jess. Jess Phillips was great. So I think I really lucked out. I don't know what it would have been like if there had been other people. Yeah, it was very enjoyable.
That's good news. Who are your female comedy heroes?
When I was very young, we lived abroad and outside India, and I watched a lot of American television. And there used to be a show called The Carol Burnett Show.
Oh, I love that.
And I used to watch Carol Burnett. All my friends in school, I was like six, would watch Sesame Street, and there was a show called The Electric Company. And I would just watch Carol Burnett. She definitely remains one of my real comedy inspirations because her timing and also the capacity to be so fully in your comedy moment. There's so many, it's hard to list them, so I'm not going to try and list everyone that I love currently, because that's everyone. But I think growing up when I was young, she was a big one for me. There's, you know, I like Ellen because she's very authentic. She is who she is. And you never feel like if you dropped into her house for dinner, she would be different.
Right.
That's very important to me. And I appreciate that as one's career develops in comedy, you do have to have a persona and you do have an act and so on. But with Ellen, you feel like it's at a minimum.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope I'm right. You know, I hope we don't get some crazy news in a year and a half where it's like Ellen is totally different. I don't think she is. And I love that kind of authentic humor. I also like her humor because you can't put it in a box. You can't say, oh, she's an ultra feminist comic or she's an ultra political comic. She makes her point of view known, but she's still all about the jokes. And they're very relatable.
Yeah.
So that's two of them. Mm. Oh, and one more I would like to say, Tig Notaro. She's an American comic. And also, I think Victoria Wood over here.
Yeah.
These are people who do things I know I could never do.
No.
They have no problem with silences.
Yeah.
They can be absurdist. I love that. So,
are male comics treated differently to female comics by the audience? And if so, how are they?
That's such a tricky question because it's impossible for me to talk about all male comics and all female comics. What I will say is, in some instances, depending again on the audience, there can be less of an appetite for very what's considered female topics. So you'll have four male comics get on stage and be like, oh, isn't it weird when my girlfriend's not there, I wank. Then the next one will come on and be like, I haven't wanked in a month. The third one will be like, my mother caught me wanking. And the fourth one will be like, oh, you know when you wank to, I don't know, some porn channel, and it's like ha ha ha, and then you'll have one woman will get on stage and talk about wanking, and everyone is like, what are you talking about? That's so female.
True.
Are you bringing up your vagina? And it's like, dude, we just had four dicks in a row, and this is the West. I'm not even talking about India, where you can understand that things are a bit more, or quite a bit more taboo. So I think in that way it can be. But I don't know if all women and all men are treated differently, but this is just one thing I have noticed as I've watched comedy and done it, yeah.
Do you have any predictions for the future of female comedy?
I really don't feel I'm someone who can have predictions on, I think, very important things like that. What I have is a hope, and I think it'll happen. I think the whole idea of it being female comedy will dissipate, will go away. It will just be comedy. Yeah. Yeah. I haven't met a single woman comedian who is not working towards that in some way. And I've met a lot of male comedians who would like to see that.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, Sindhu, can you tell me something about your up-and-coming Edinburgh show?
Yes, I would love to. So nice of you to ask. So I'm taking my debut hour to Edinburgh, which is a big deal for me, a whole hour, the whole month. The show is called Sandhog, and you'll have to come to the show to see why it's called Sandhog.
Okay.
And it's at 4:30 every day, 1st of August to the 26th at the Pleasance. And I'm looking forward to it. 4:30 is a good time because that means I've had my nap. I have a nap every day, and I'll be ready to go. So 4:30 at the Pleasance, Edinburgh 2018, Sandhog.
Sindhu V, thank you for joining me on Radio Gorgeous. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. That was fun.
RadioGorgeous.com